Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Drexel head coach Brian Volker as we continue to talk about recruiting with Division I head men's lacrosse coaches heading up to September 1st. Coach Volker, thank you so much for joining us. For your knowledge, what we are trying to accomplish is help increase the understanding, information access, lift the veil, so to speak, on this process of college recruiting, specifically for parents, because this time of year I get so many questions from parents about how they should expect the process to unfold, and ultimately, who better to hear from than folks like yourself and in your position.
Right. Yeah, well, thanks for having me. I hope I could help.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. And I think to get started, you know, the way that we structured a couple of these conversations was the first half was around how you evaluate, and the second half was around how you communicate. And then more recently, we've structured the conversations in kind of like a chronological way. I have a different idea for you, and it kind of depends on your answer to this initial question. It is my opinion that among programs that have attained a certain level of success, and let's call it having won an NCAA tournament game in the last decade, which you have done, Drexel is the farthest outlier in terms of how it recruits. Do you agree with that assessment?
I guess I do in some ways. I mean, we just kind of do our thing. I've never really, you know, kind of looked around and said we do it differently, but we've always just done it the way we felt was appropriate. I know when the before they changed the rules where we could, you know, where guys could recruit kids when they were in eighth grade and ninth grade and 10th grade, we never did that. So I know we were an outlier there, and I would be hanging out with a lot of Division III coaches watching talent, you know, and so we've always done things a little bit differently. Part of it is my own personal experience as a recruit. And it's a long, long time ago, but I think back to, you know, when I was that age, the size I was and how, you know, how much better I got and bigger and stronger and faster, you know, from my freshman year in high school to my senior year in high school. So part of that is that, part of it's having, you know, I have two sons, they're now 23 and 21, and my older son didn't go through this process. My younger one did a little bit. You know, I say it all the time to kids that we recruit, like, I think you should probably go to your junior prom before you pick where you're going to college. And I say that as a parent, and I say that really even as a coach. I mean, we don't want to get kids here that aren't prepared for it, that don't know what they're getting into. That stuff doesn't help us. So we just try to make sure we've done our homework, make sure that the kids have done their homework, know what they're getting into. We're hardly ever putting deadlines on guys. And I know a lot of coaches say they don't do that stuff. But when you say, hey, you better buy this car or it might not be here tomorrow, that's, you know, the same thing as a deadline. And again, not that we never do that stuff, but, by the time, you know, we're through this process, we just don't have to do that stuff a lot. But so we've always done it a little bit differently. You know, I feel like we have to at Drexel. But I also just feel like, you know, the process should go a little bit differently, maybe than it even does a little bit right now.
So I think you kind of created a little bit of an outline for the conversation that I want to have right there. Let's start by talking about your experience and your staff's experience. Where are you from? Where did you play? How did you develop as a player? For folks that are unacquainted, can you tell us a little bit about your playing experience? And then similarly, who are your assistant coaches and what are their backgrounds?
Yeah, so I'm from Baltimore. I grew up, I went to Gilman, you know, back in my day when it was, you know, black and white TVs and, you know, all that stuff, the recruiting process was really different. There weren't a lot of these tournaments. There weren't a lot of club teams, you know, and there weren't a lot of kids from different areas playing. So it was definitely a different experience. But just for me, I mean, I was tiny. I was, you know, I weighed in at football in ninth grade at like 100 pounds. I think I put like a 2 pound weight, you know, in my pocket to weigh in at 100 pounds. You know, I was almost 150 pounds to start my senior year, you know, in high school. I got a little bit bigger. But you know, I grew in college, to be honest. I ended up, you know, going to Johns Hopkins. I was actually one of the first people to know where I was going to college in my whole class at Gilman. But you know, compared to where things are these days, it wasn't September 1st, that's for sure. And but you know, I went through kind of an earlier process. I visited some schools. I tell the story about, you know, visiting Army with I grew up with my grandparents and having a really good time, but also being in the back seat of my car, you know, leaving the campus saying, God, I don't know if this is what I want to do or I can do. And God bless those kids that do that. But I didn't think it was for me. And I was lucky enough to get a scholarship to Johns Hopkins, and had a pretty good career there. So my assistant, Steve, my two of my assistants are Hopkins guys, and that's not by design. It just kind of has worked that way. I've had some Hopkins guys through here as assistant coaches. Steve is from New Hampshire, and was a really good player, you know, at Hopkins. I don't really know what his recruiting process was like. I do know Tucker Durkin's a Hopkins guy. You know, he went through that process, and I think at one point he was committed somewhere, and then, you know, decommitted and then went to Hopkins. So again, that's one of the things that we're trying to do is make sure we don't have a lot of kids decommitting. You know, it doesn't make sense for me to lock in kids on September 1st and then have them not come here. So that's another reason we go a little bit slower. And then Coach Karp, you know, he's an old guy. I don't know really where you know, his recruiting process was like. But yeah, Steve and Tuck were big time recruits and really good players. And again, I think, you know, wherever you go, wherever you're looking, that's probably the first thing that you have to figure out from a recruit's perspective is like where you fit in that process. And a lot of that, you know, kind of will tell you coming up here September 1st, like the amount of calls and texts and emails and, you know, all that stuff that you get. So.
So with all that as kind of like established foundation, what is Drexel as a university and as a lacrosse program before we get to even the types of players that have tended to be attracted to the Dragons?
Yeah, so look, you know, I say it all the time, and again, you know, Steve played a little bit of pro. Even I was, you know, lucky enough to be in some of the pro leagues back in the day. Tuck still plays in the pro league. You know, those paychecks aren't that impressive yet. So, you know, no matter where kids are looking, they have to look at the type of school. And the type of school that they're going to be successful, and if they know what they want to study or they think they do, they have to figure some of that stuff out. You know, we don't have every major that every kid wants. We were just talking about a little bit before I hopped on, obviously. You know, we're known for this co-op program, which means a lot of our kids go to school for 5 years, and for part of the school year, kids go to work. So, you know, for me, that's a big selling point in our recruiting process. I don't know if the kids understand it, but their parents do. You know, our kids walk out of here with real resumes, real job experiences, and a lot of times with job offers kind of in their pocket going into their senior year. But yeah, I mean, I think kids have to figure that stuff out. I don't think Drexel's, you know, many kids or, you know, I don't want to say any, but I don't know if it's their dream school. So I don't know if we're the first school that you know, they list. But you know, we try to give the kids a really good lacrosse experience. We try to give them a really good college experience. You know, I think sometimes us coaches forget that lacrosse should be a big part of a great college experience, and obviously part of that's winning. But a lot of it's also like making great friends and just having a really great experience. So you know, we definitely try to install that, instill that in our program, and have that stuff. And you know, we've been pretty good here. We've had some really good success on the field. You know, Drexel's a good school. There's a lot of engineering kids through here. There's a lot of business majors through here. We get a lot of sport management majors, and then there's kids doing all kinds of other things. But yeah, it's a good school. You got to work hard. Like just about every place, you know, the kids are going to look here. So I do think that's the thing that the kids, and it's sometimes it's hard for those guys to figure out, but they do have to listen to their parents a little bit to help them guide them to places that, you know, they're going to enjoy, they're going to be successful, they're going to have the right major, they're going to, you know, be successful in the classrooms. And when they come out of college, hopefully there's a great lacrosse experience in there somewhere. But there's also, you know, something that's going to help them 10, 15, 20 years down the road, with their degree and you know, the resumes and all that stuff.
So, what do you describe, or how do you describe the culture of the program?
Well, look, I say it all the time. The good thing about college lacrosse is, you know, the personalities change your team personality changes kind of year after year. Again, we talk in our recruiting with kids all the time about, your number one priority has to be, wanting to come here and be a good student and work hard in the classroom and kind of take care of business there, get a good degree. Hopefully a close second, maybe even a 1B, is wanting to be a really good lacrosse player, and helping our team be really good and compete for the CAA championship and go to the NCAA tournament. Those are goals we have every year. And then hopefully, 3 through 3,000 can be, having a girlfriend or, being in a club or, going to the art museum or going to an Eagles game or, there's all kinds of things going on here in Philadelphia or going on in college. We want our kids to have a really good experience. We want our kids to enjoy college. One of the reasons I'm a college coach is, I love lacrosse, but I also had a really great college experience. I have great friends. I have, guys that were teammates and guys that weren't teammates that are really good friends of mine. I met my wife at Johns Hopkins, was lucky enough to do that. We want these kids to have a really good experience. Obviously we want to win, and we want to be really good. We want kids to be really good on the lacrosse field. But you got to remember that there's other things that go into it.
So diving into how some, I guess, kids find their way to Drexel or vice versa. You mentioned before we started recording that you reevaluated the event schedule that you wanted to attend this summer on the basis of feeling like it was a worthwhile use of your time. What did that reanalysis or reevaluation look like?
Well, part of it's just the kind of the changing landscape of, what's going on kind of the recruiting circuit. Things getting better, things getting worse, events getting better, events getting worse. So we did a little bit of that stuff. I think everybody, the NLF is really, starting to dominate a lot of the things that we do in the summers and the circuits. To be honest, that's never really been our bread and butter. I don't think we're going to get to where we want to get to by taking the 10th and 15th and 20th best kids on even really good club teams, sometimes. So we've had to kind of find, different avenues to find some of our recruits. Not that we don't have any of those guys. I have good relationships with a lot of those club coaches. My assistants do. But we've always had to find kind of different areas and different, pockets to find, our kids. It's become a little bit more challenging, to be quite honest. The more that the NLF kind of like ropes more people in it and bands together, they've really dominated a lot of this club stuff. And to me, to go, to go see the same kids playing the same kids every weekend in a row, or sometimes it feels like every day in a row, doesn't do us as much good as probably that if they were playing other guys. So, but yeah, that's one of the things that we figured out. We hope that our recruiting is going to go well. We're excited about our 24 class. Just starting to think about the 25s and what we need and all that stuff. But we'll see if what we did worked and if we have to maybe go back to some of those events or figure out other events to get to.
So looking at your 24 class, there are a couple of things that jump out. I believe there are 7 commits from the Philadelphia area and 2 or 3 others that are from, just outside of the Philadelphia area. How important is that local flavor, both to your roster and to the types of players to whom Drexel appeals?
I think, naturally local kids know us a little bit better, just from being here. But again, I say it a lot, like, to me, it doesn't really matter where you're from. Again, the days when I grew up, if you weren't from Baltimore or Long Island or upstate New York, that you probably, had a hard time getting on a Division I team and a Division I roster. Those days are gone. If we can get a great kid from Alaska, that wants to come here and work hard and is going to be a good player for us, we'll take him. I'm from Baltimore. I would love to get, more MIA kids, more Baltimore kids. That hasn't been our bread and butter, but we've gotten some, and some of them have been really good and done great things for us. you know, we can see Philly kids, you know, a little bit more. So I think that's one of the reasons, and that helped us kind of this year with that class especially. But we've also had years where we only have one or two Philly kids. But yeah, I think this year just kind of happened to be that way. And you know, there were good kids out there that we liked that liked us. And that's usually when good things happen.
The other thing that really jumps out is you received one commitment in September of their junior year, one in October, one in November, three in December, two in January, and then you've taken, I believe, four or five since the summer began. And I guess the best way to frame the question is, how does that timeline fit your ideal? And if you could replicate or change that for the 25s and beyond, would you, or is that essentially the pace that you want to stick?
Well, again, I'll tell you when those 24s get here and see how they play. But, yeah. You know, look, we've found that kids that we've taken later have been some of our best recruits. Again, not that guys that we haven't taken early haven't been good, but we always are out there looking. Again, we're not a program that is trying to pile kids in and have, you know, 60 man rosters and figure out like when they get here, who's going to be good and who's not. But again, early in the process, this September 1 date, I think is a much bigger day for a lot of other coaches, maybe, or a lot of other staffs than it is for our staff. Not that we're not going to be busy, but I don't think we're going to, you know, make or break our recruiting, you know, on that day or that week, to be honest. Our September commit last year, I believe, was a brother of two players that we have here. So that was probably early for us. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't have, you know, if we have zero September guys. Maybe we sneak one in there. But yeah, it's we tend to go longer, and we do tend to get some kids, you know, in December after watching guys play in November. Even though November recruiting can drive you crazy in a lot of ways. But then we kind of turn the spigot off a little bit, you know, over the holidays and then, you know, really say, hey, you know, if we waited this long, maybe we can go out and see kids play again, and start seeing those guys play in the spring and then starting to really kind of get back on, you know, getting kids committed and stuff. But yeah, we like to see kids play multiple times. We like to see, you know what we're getting into. We try to make sure kids get here to campus, and not only, you know, meet with us as coaches and hear our spiel, because I think we're all good at, like, you know, putting the spin and saying the things that people want to hear. But a lot of times we want the guys that we're recruiting to meet the kids on our team and spend the night and really know what it's like to be in a dorm and, you know, what it's, if the kids study too much or they play too many video games or not enough or, you know, whatever it is, right? Every kid's a little bit different. Every place is a little bit different. I've been here, you know, a while. I can't tell you what it's like to live in a dorm here. I've never done it. I can't tell you what it's like to, you know, try to get a girlfriend here. Thank goodness I've never had to do that. So, you know, I could probably tell you a couple cheesesteak places, but I'm too old to eat at most of those places. So, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that kids have to figure out a little bit on their own. And like I said, we want to make sure that, you know, when they get here, they know why they're here and they really want to be here.
How do you describe yourself as an evaluator?
I try not to make things too complicated. You know, again, we're not a system team. You don't have to be a certain size, weight, 40, you know, bench press reps, like all that stuff. I mean, obviously every team has specific needs at times. And there's times, you know, when we feel like we have to go get lefties or we have to go get, you know, this kind of defenseman, or, you know, we really need a face-off guy. We really, you know, there's specific needs, but, you know, for us, you know, and when I talk to my assistants, it's like, hey, go to places, take notes on people, and figure out reasons why you like them or you don't like them, why we should recruit them or why we shouldn't, and just tell me. And we really collaborate. You know, Steve runs the offense. Tucker's done a really good job running the defense. You know, Carp last year did a great job with our faceoff guys and our goalies. You know, but if Tuck sees an attackman that he thinks is great, you know, there's no reason he can't say, like, hey, you know, we really got to look at this kid and here's why. And if Steve looks at a D guy and says, wow, that guy, you know, jumped off the page, You know, those are guys that will go out. Look, I'll kind of do a little bit of both. You know, I do think I can see some things defensively that maybe some other people can't see. And the good news for me is I think Tuck and I are really on the same page with a lot of that stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think you gotta, you know, roll your sleeves up, go see a lot of kids play, and just figure out, you know, who's good and who's not, and the reasons why, and then go after the kids that are good.
You mentioned the issue of poaching, and you know, it goes both directions. And you know, you've picked up some players and you've lost some players over the course of your time at Drexel. How do you fit that into either the decision matrix, the equation, the expectations, whatever the case may be? How do you just account for the fact that, you know, when somebody commits to me, it's not necessarily a done deal until there's an NLI or he's on campus, or vice versa. If I see a kid that's verbally committed elsewhere and I think we have a legitimate shot at trying to bring him to Drexel, you know, it's my responsibility to attempt that.
I think for us, some things have changed again, especially with the new rule, not being able to recruit kids before their junior year. To me, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I was the guy that stood up in meetings, you know, a couple of years ago and said, like, look, I'm not going to recruit freshmen and sophomores. If we see good kids play, you know, when they're in their junior year, we're gonna go talk to them. So that dynamic has changed, in some ways, but in some ways, there's a lot more coaches saying, you know, now, like, hey, you know, if there's kids out there and they can help our programs, we're gonna go after them. So I think you see a lot more of that. You know, with the new rule, you thought you maybe would see less. But I also think, you know, guys understand what's going on and guys want to win. Coaches want to win. And look, I say it all the time, kids should end up where they belong, right? And where they, you know, are the most comfortable and where they're going to have a great experience. We hope we don't lose as many, you know, of the kids to poaching because of the way we do the process and, you know, kind of how we, I don't want to say plot along, but we, you know, make sure kids know what they're, you know, getting into and go through the process. And it's not just like, hey, I talked to this guy on the phone and, you know, that sounds like they have cool stuff and let's, you know, I want to go there. So we, you know, we hopefully it doesn't happen to us as much, but it happens. And sometimes you have to, you know, then go out and see if there are guys out there and then re-poach and, you know, do some of that stuff. But sometimes you just end up with one less kid in your class. It's hard, you know, it's hard to account for that because every kid is a little bit different. Every situation is a little bit different money wise. So it is hard to figure some of that stuff out, but you know, it happens and it's out there. And, you know, again, for me, like if your kids, like, you know, I say all the time, and I think you're starting to hear kids get advice from the other way. Well, just commit early. And then if you don't want to go there, you know, then you can always do something else. Again, you would hope that that doesn't happen. I mean, situations change and kids want to do different things and all that stuff. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, to me, you know, and it's easier for me on this side of the desk, I guess, to say, like, take a deep breath, wait, you know, go when you're ready to go rather than when some coach says, I need to know right now, or I need to know in a day, or I need to know in a week. But for us, you know, I would say, like, there's a lot of really good opportunities out there. There's a lot of really good programs. There's a lot of really good coaches, a lot of, you know, teams that are good, you know, full of good kids. I think there's a lot of opportunities out there for kids. And to me, they should go when they're ready to go. So, my advice would be to take a deep breath and don't just jump at the first thing.
Has the presence of the transfer portal changed your recruiting at all?
A little bit. Again, you know, with the portal out there, you always want to leave a little bit in case you need something. You know, we're not a go crazy in the portal, you know, team. Last year, we picked up a kid who basically got into grad school here on his own, and we didn't promise him a spot. And Tate ended up playing a lot for us. He came from Gettysburg. He was a transfer and did a really good job for us. And then we had Justin, who was a face-off guy. And, you know, 2 years ago, we were the second to last team in the country facing off. So we went crazy to try to find a face-off guy, and Justin really helped us. So this year, we did the same thing. We thought we needed some face-off help. We got a face-off kid committed that we're really super happy about. But then a day or two later, there was, you know, Cabrini ended up closing. And we ended up getting the face-off kid from there that we really liked. But, if he was just a 1 year kid, we wouldn't have taken him, but he's got a couple years of eligibility. He's at, he's got 3 more years. So we decided we would, we would still take him. So that was a little bit unusual for us. And then we have a guy coming in from Dickinson, that we think can go, be a good player that we recruited. So we haven't gone crazy in the portal. But you know, it's out there and you got to figure out if it can help you or not.
You brought up something at the beginning of the conversation that I want to revisit, which is that your son, Brendan, is going to be a junior at Georgetown.
A senior,
yeah. Excuse me. Sorry. I didn't want to give you another year's worth of tuition checks there. But he was a high school class of 2020, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so that put him in a kind of unique he experienced two of the most substantial aspects of the way in which recruiting has changed or been impacted over the course of the last 10 years. First, by being the class that was probably most significantly affected by the institution of the early recruiting rules. So for those that don't know or don't remember, the NCAA imposed or created a rule that was stewarded by the IWLCA, the Women's Coaches Association, on, if memory serves, April 15th, 2017. And there was so much confusion around how it was going to be implemented and how immediately it was going to be implemented. And essentially what it did is it froze the recruitment for the classes of 2019 and 2020. And in the class of 21, which I guess at that point would have been the current eighth graders, there were 6 players who had committed. In the class of 2020, there were about 100 to 125 players who had committed. And then the class of 2019 was probably roughly full. Roughly half full. So it was really the 2018s were still allowed to talk because they were beyond that, like, September 1st of their junior year date. So your son's process was impacted by that. But then also, he lost his senior high school season because of the pandemic shutdown. And even though that might not have had such a substantial effect on his recruitment, it certainly did in the context of, conversation and experience and everything else that entailed relative to the outset of his college experience. So the broadest question to start is, what did you learn going through the process as a parent that you didn't previously know?
Well, look, Brendan, he listened to me a little bit, which, I guess a lot of kids don't. He wasn't, super hyped up about the club process. He really only joined a club team a little bit later, kind of in his high school career. He loved high school football, so he spent a lot of time doing a lot of high school football stuff in the summer. He loved lacrosse. He wasn't sure, if he was going to end up doing it in college. He went through the process a little bit with some schools. He ended up getting into Georgetown on his own, and walked on the team. And Kevin and his staff have been great down there. But yeah, the process was different. I mean, as a parent, you go through it and you learn some things. You learn that every school is a little bit different. I guess when you do a bunch of these tours, you learn that a lot of schools have rock climbing walls these days, and a lot of schools talk about kids going abroad in this, during the school year. There's a lot of things that, as athletes, we don't think about a lot. So I think that helped my perspective a little bit when we were recruiting kids and knowing, what they were interested in or what other, what they were hearing from kind of other things. But yeah, his process was definitely a little bit different. And, for me, it was more just like, let's try to get him to a place where he's going to be happy. Let's try to get him to a place where, there's a staff that is going to look after him and take care of him a little bit. I know he's a kid that, is always going to be like working hard and loving to be on the team. And he's a weight room guy. Like he just, he's like one of those kids that, loves to work out, loves to be a part of that team. And again, for me, we had to sit down and kind of go through some stuff and say, hey, let's look realistically. If this is important, you should maybe look at these places. If this thing's more important, maybe let's look at these couple of places. But again, academics and majors were the first thing, right? It was, that was the first thing we were looking for. And he was smart enough to get into, a great school. So that worked for him. Even though my son Jack didn't go through the athletic part of the process, there were definitely things that I was able to help him with, with the process, and some of them he listened to and some of them he didn't. He ended up here at Drexel. He's my favorite son because it cost him, me a lot less for him to go here than Brendan to Georgetown. So he's at the top of the list right now, especially when Georgetown just raised their tuition. But yeah, it is interesting to see that process and see it from both sides, and again, try to help your kids, and hopefully they listen to you when you know what you're talking about, and hopefully you listen to them. That was the other thing, right? You have to listen to what they want. That stuff's important.
Yeah, I always think, when folks decry the process for all of its ills and negatives, I'm like, well, would you rather go through the process as a non-athlete with no help and no stewardship and no additional opportunity? Because that's the process that I experienced, and it's not a bed of roses waiting for, a letter to arrive on February 15th of your senior year or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and look, I think, that's the one thing, as us as coaches, and I know I've always done is made sure we had that stuff locked down. So when kids are committing, unless something really crazy happens, it's going to end up working out. Again, if there's advice to parents going through this process, we want to hear from the kids and we want to talk to the kids. And there's definitely certain things that that the parents should stay out of, but there are certain things that the parents have to get the answers to. Finances are one of them, and I know how important that is. When somebody says like, okay, you're going to commit here, you as a parent have to make sure you know what that commitment means on the other end. From us college coaches, it can't just be like, oh yeah, we're going to try to get you in, or we think it's going to work out. It's got to be like, here's why we know that it's going to work out. Here are the stats. Here's what we do. Here's how we do it. I do think parents, if they're going to ask questions, those are the things that they need to have clear and answer those questions. And look, Brendan went through this process. One of the schools he was looking at was MIT, and the coach up there handled it great. I with my son's grades and ACT scores, I still can't believe he didn't get in there. But the coach, explained very well what their process was and what committing there went and how that was going to go. And Brendan didn't get in there. And to be honest with you, I think Georgetown's a better place for him. But yeah, I mean, every school, has a different process, a different admissions process, a different way to do the things. I talk very differently, in some ways about admissions here than I did at Penn when I was the head coach there. But I, no matter where I've been, when we're doing this, one of the reasons we do go a little bit slower is we're always making sure we get what we need, academically, to make sure we know that it's going to work out, and the kids aren't going to be surprised, with some crazy letter that they don't want to get.
A similar question, what have you learned by being a lacrosse parent of a college lacrosse player that you didn't previously know? And how has that informed how you go about your business?
There lacrosse parents, again, like any parents, you have a hard time in a lot of ways being objective. I guess that's probably not just a lacrosse parent. Lacrosse parents, they do a lot of great things, but there's some things that they definitely have to relax with a little bit. And again, look, it just comes with that whole thing. And on both sides, and again, you talked about it, hearing about like the process and how crazy it is and like all that stuff. Again, at some point you have to sit down and listen to your son or daughter. At some point, hopefully your son or daughter listen to you a little bit, that you make this thing some smiles, right? Like there should be some fun stuff with this. There should be like, some of these visits like that I went on with my son Jack were like pretty boring, and you're falling asleep and listening to stuff, and then some were really funny and you laughed and you saw cool stuff. So I do think going through this process, you just have to figure out like, again, try to guide your son or daughter to places that you think they're going to be happy. But you also have to like listen, and unless there's something that you really think your kid's going to make a horrid mistake, there's a lot of great places out there. And again, one of the things I think lacrosse parents have to figure out is, how important lacrosse is, for us to their sons, to the sons and daughters, and maybe it's not as important to them as it is to the parents sometimes. And that's usually a recipe for disaster, to be quite honest. Look, there's a lot that goes into this. If your kid doesn't really want to play at the college level, or if he wants to go to a club, go to and play club somewhere, those kids have a lot of fun, and they probably have great lacrosse experiences a lot of times. Some parents are so, bent on my kid's got to go D1. Well, there's a lot of great Division II and Division III experiences out there. The kids have to figure that out, and the parents have to let them figure that out. So I would say, both sides have to listen a little bit, but also both sides have to do their homework and get some stuff figured out and figure out, how important lacrosse is, because it's a big commitment. It's a big commitment at D2 schools. It's a big commitment at D3 schools. And it sure as heck's a big commitment here at Drexel and at D1 schools.
One of the elements of the way that this series is being structured is, to start, I'm going to talk to one coach from a program in each of the 10 conferences, because there's so much variety between, how program number one versus program number 76 or 77 goes about this, what they look for, what they want to get out of it. And even within the conference, there tends to be a decent amount of variety. I mean, you're in a league that is – for 10 years, roughly, the CAA was always the funnest, most fun conference to follow, because the team that won the regular season championship never won the tournament championship. Nobody ever won it 2 years in a row. And typically the team that you thought was going to be the worst team in the conference ended up winning it by the end of the year. That on-field variety reflects, in some respects, the difference between the public-private components of it, the history of, each programs. And obviously, you've experienced a little bit of realignment recently. UMass was a longtime member of the league since coming over from the ECAC, and they recently left to join A-10, and then Stony Brook and Hampton joined as well to kind of swell the ranks a little bit more. Do you see your conference peers on the trail, or is that variety, is that distinction so substantial that you really don't actually recruit that much against some of the other programs?
No, you do. Look, every school, every coach, every coaching staff, tends to find their niche, whatever that niche is. We'll probably maybe talk about it later, but I joke with the NIL stuff. I feel like, all that's doing is the same programs are getting the same kids, are just paying more for them, or somebody's paying more for them, or whatever it is. Right. So, we see each other, you see us all on the sidelines. Sometimes it ends up being you sit right next to, the conference, the guy that you want to beat their brains out the most or whatever, but you're friends with them, or you like them and they like you, and you just, you're sitting there and you're recruiting the same kids. Sometimes you can go, a couple of events and not see somebody, from your conference or that you usually see. It just, kind of depends what it is. Recruiting's interesting. I say it all the time, Steve and Tuck and Carp and I spend a lot of time in the office, during the season, but during the summer, we don't see each other a lot. Right. Cause it's okay, Steve, tell me where I'm going, where do you want me to go? And, Tuck's going here and I'm going there, and we're trying to cover a lot of different ground. There's not a ton of times when we're sitting together, on a sideline with each other. The process is different, but yeah, we recruit, against all those guys. We recruit against, sometimes we tend to hear the same names a lot. Some of that has to do with the way we recruit and the timing of our recruiting. There's not a lot of secrets out there. I talk to kids all the time, and I'll say, where else are you looking? And some kids are a little hesitant to tell, to tell you. And I'm like, look, I can tell you bad stories about a lot of these guys probably, but the problem is they can probably tell you bad ones about me. So, you gotta be careful with that stuff. So, we all run into each other. We all knock heads with each other. You know, some of us are better friends with some guys than they are with others. And to be honest with you, there's guys probably that hate each other. There's everywhere in between. But yeah, you know, the CAA is always interesting. You know, it's going to be interesting. There's great programs, good coaches, really great players in the league. You know, again, my job is to figure out how we can get guys here that, you know, that are good players that we can make better. And compete for that stuff every year. And like I said, hopefully we continue to do a good job of that. And, you know, our coaches, I think, do help me with that. Tuck and Steve and Carp have been great. So we're happy with who we are. And again, I say a lot of times to kids, like, you know, we're going to talk about Drexel a lot. Like, you know, I'm not going to talk about, you know, I could tell you crazy stories about Hofstra and their head coach. You know, we'd lived together for a couple of years and, you know, I can tell you like really crazy stuff, but you know, that's not going to help anybody and that's not going to do anybody any good. I do tell the kids that are getting recruited by Hofstra, I could probably tell you the same jokes that Coach Tierney is telling you because I've already heard them all. But yeah, it's you know, it is a strange business. I mean, there's times when you're butting heads really, you know, really hard with people you know really well and you care about, and you know, they're your roommates, they're your friends, you're like this, that, and the other. And then there's times where you're butting heads with, you know, guys that, to be honest with you, don't like at all. So it is an interesting process.
To wind down the conversation and square the focus a little bit on the end of this week, one of the things about Drexel that is most unique is that you're on a quarter system, and as you mentioned, you have this co-op program. So a lot of your players and students are working right now, and they're not going to start school until the end of September. And you and your staff will use that time to kind of a combination of continue to decompress from the summer as well as start conversations with members of the class of 2025. You mentioned that you met in an effort to be more organized around how you were going to start contacting folks. What does that organization look like? Where is your list at right now, and how do you want to start talking to folks that you would ideally like to at some point bring into the Dragon family?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're not the team that's gonna wake up, or I guess with Steve and Tuck, maybe it's not wake up, but for me, it would be wake up and make calls at midnight. You know, we're gonna reach out to kids, you know, in the morning on Friday. You know, a lot of it'll probably be like either text messages or emails, and say, hey, we're out there and we're interested. Try to set up a phone call. You know, making some calls, and you know, I found that it's probably easier. I don't think kids. I know I don't answer my phone a lot when people are calling me and I don't know the number. But you know, shooting an email or a text and saying, "Hey, we're interested. Let's figure out a time to connect." You know, is probably the better way to go about it. I would say that there's other coaches that are just going to like start hammering guys and calling at midnight and going crazy and all that stuff. But everybody does their thing. But yeah, I mean, you know, again, we want to be organized. We want to like our list is usually bigger, to be quite honest. You know, I know we're going to get a lot of, you know, thanks for the interest, but no thanks. You know, kind of right off the bat. I'd rather kids tell me that stuff. You know, right away, if they don't have interest in it, and they can kind of go do their thing. And then the flip side of it is, you know, I do say to you know, our coaches and I do say to recruits, like it's, you know, it's easier to, you know, if you're a kid in high school to try to get a date from the girl that smiles back at you, right? So for us, it's definitely easier, you know, when kids show interest, when kids answer text messages, answer emails, answer phone calls, and they talk to you on the phone, you know, it's easier to recruit those kids. But what you don't want is kids like just being nice to you, you know, and just, you know, not that you have to be rude, but, you know, don't just string guys along if you know there's places you're not interested in. And again, it's kind of early for that, but if there are places that you just don't have any interest in, you're doing coaches a favor when you tell them, like, hey, yeah, really appreciate the interest, but I'm, you know, focusing on these couple of places.
Brian Volker, we really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. This was very informative, very funny at moments, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the week and look forward to crossing paths at some point this fall and then getting eyes on your squad in the spring of 24 when you take the field for real.
Hopefully it was funny when I was trying to be funny. Thanks.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.